Hello, and welcome to SoberCast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting SoberCast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
10 minutes. Hi, I'm Babatunde, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Babatunde.
Please stand.
Yes.
That how you all roll? Fine. I will stand. 10 minutes is really tough for me because I'm very verbose and I like to talk. In fact, I get paid to talk, so I took some notes. Hopefully it won't seem too canned. I'm sorry. I love this program. Okay. I've been sober 4 years, 10 months, and 26 days. I have a service commitment. I'm a secretary. I have a sponsor, and I'm currently working through my fourth step again. And it still sucks. It sucks every time I do it, and that's the way it is. I am in love with this program. And because I'm in love with this program, I have to tell all of you, the truth is, I totally fucking love everybody here. I don't know you, and I don't have to like you, and some of you may not like me, and that's okay. But I love you because my higher presence sort of teaches me how to work through this program. And for me, working through this program is about working through love. It's about getting rid of a lot of my fear and resentment. And being honest. And so I'm really at an interesting time right now. The three things that I want to talk about quickly are victim, volunteer, and victory. I started drinking when I was like 5 because my mother would give me rum and honey in order to help me get over sickness. I was an acolyte in church, and so I would steal alcohol, the wine, and drink it, and I got drunk doing that. And I was a drop-down drunk from 13. My first real serious drunk with a headache and puking in the morning was gin and peach schnapps. I drank alcoholically for as long as I've known about alcoholism and well before that and after. Drugs are part of my story. Lots of them in various places and quantities, and somehow I still survived. 20 years ago, I was in a room like this back in the Midwest, where I'm from, and I couldn't see myself in that room. And so if you are new here, and you look around the room, you think, whoa, I'm nothing like these people. They are fucked up. They are, like, drunk, and they've got problems. That's me. That was me. I had those problems. I was that drunk. I was like, bus money was being spent on blow and alcohol. I'm going to tell you something I've never told anybody, even my best friend. I was so fucked up that I actually was like, I shat on my buddy's pillow. And because I had nothing in me except for like lemon juice and like, and potatoes and onions that I had stolen from the market next door to the loft that we lived in. And I'm not going to tell you why I ended up shitting on his pillow, but I will tell you that I never told him that, and that's an amends I still have to make. I did wash it, but that's really no excuse. I don't care if you're sober. I don't care if you're drunk. I don't care about any of that shit. I'm really glad you're here because there is health and hope. And this program, people will say, like, it's if you work it. It's if you work it. This program is not for people who want it. It's if you work it. For me, this program was about survival, right? I was in the hospital. I'm just going to jump over the drunk log because I don't have much time. I was in the hospital with a MRSA infection in my face, like a horrible MRSA infection that came from me. You know, doing a bunch of blow and living a pretty disgusting existence. I almost died. They thought I had meningitis. They did 2 spinal taps on me. I had people walking around me in, like, spacesuits because I thought that I was going to, like, kill the whole floor. Turned out I just had a MRSA infection, and I didn't tell my doctors that I had that infection because I'd been using a bunch of drugs, and, you know, sometimes that shit happens. That did not sober me up, right? What sobered me up was 6 months after that, when I was supposed to be at an awards ceremony, and I wasn't at that awards ceremony because I was getting fucked up in a hotel room with lots of substances, and I told my boss, yeah, my car broke down on the Golden Gate Bridge, and so I can't make it. Actually, that isn't what got me fucked up. It's when I woke up a couple days later and I realized that I really didn't want to die anymore, and I'd like to figure out why I'm trying to kill myself slowly. And I put myself in a program. And that's when I stopped thinking about being an alcoholic, recognized that I was an alcoholic, recognized that I couldn't do it by myself, and really started asking for help. That was almost 5 years ago. And in sobriety, let me share with you a couple things about what life has been like in sobriety. I got promoted. I got fired. I got fired and laid off because I stood up for myself and I did the next right thing, the next ethical thing. And they canned me. I got 5 minutes left. 6 months later, I got fired again for telling the truth about things in the business. I didn't drink. I didn't pick up. I got a mortgage. I got a wife that I'm about to get separated from. All of these things are happening, and I don't have to pick up. I don't have to drink. The only reason I was a dry drunk for a couple years. I mean, I got in the program. I worked a good program. I worked the steps, and then I started feeling like, oh, everything's fine. I don't have to go into the program anymore. I don't have to go to these meetings. And what happened is I almost started drinking. I started, like, imagining a glass of vodka, like, coming towards me slowly and, like, draining the bottle. I started imagining, like, smoking and putting things up my nose. And you know what happened? What happened is in March, I found myself running up 40th Street towards the Rockridge Fellowship. Like, literally running. I haven't, like, ran to a meeting before or after, but I recognize that this program saves lives. It saved my life. It saved the life of my first sponsor, my second sponsor, my current sponsor. It saves fucking lives, but you have to actually put some time and investment in it. You have to actually think about working the steps with someone who actually knows what they're doing. That's the only way it worked for me. I now go to about 12 meetings a week. I never thought I'd do that, right? I never thought I'd do that. I never thought I'd need that. I was like, oh, I got this. I'm really strong. I'm really smart. I can get this shit. I don't have it. I never fucking have it. I'm only sober right now because I went to two other meetings this morning, and somehow I'm at my third meeting, right? Like, if I don't go to meetings, if I don't work a program, if I don't tell the truth, if I'm not honest with a bunch of people who I don't know, who I don't care if they're judging me or not, then I fucking die. My best friend Greg died. My best friend John died. None of that fucking mattered to me. They overdosed and they died. I wept for them, but it didn't keep me sober. You have to decide, I think, whether or not you really want to live. This is about life and death. This is about continuing to strive to live. That's what this program is like to me. And you don't have to be in pain. You don't have to be angry all the time. You don't have to. This can be a joyous program. And my hope for everybody in this room, especially those people that are new, is that you find through these steps the type of joy and passion and love and care that I have found through connecting with the people in these rooms. Because I could not do this without everybody here and everybody else that I've connected with. So, thank you.
kill him. Again, hi, my name is Dorothy, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I would just like to read something before I start. Is this too hard? Okay. This is from the Keys to the Kingdom. AA is not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. It is a way of life, and the challenge contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as he lives. We do not, cannot, outgrow this plan. As arrested alcoholics, we must have a program for living that allows for limitless expansion. Keeping one foot in front of the other is essential for maintaining our arrestment. Others may idle in retrogressive groove without too much danger, but retrogression can spell death for us. However, this isn't as rough as it sounds. As we do become grateful for the necessity that makes us toe the line, we find that we are compensated for consistent effort by the countless dividends we receive. A complete change takes place in our approach to life. Where we used to run from responsibility, we find ourselves accepting it with gratitude that we can successfully shoulder it. Instead of wanting to escape some perplexing problem, we experience the thrill of challenge and the opportunity affords for one another. And I'll stop there. Before I start, just like any other alcoholic, I was in my head about tonight, and I just kept saying, God use me. So that's what I came up with, my conclusion. And I should start off and say my sobriety date is June 18, 2002. It took a long time for me to get into Alcoholics Anonymous. And thanks for your share, by the way. My perspective on my story has changed, but my story hasn't changed. So I grew up Catholic. I'm still a practicing Catholic. I went to Catholic school. At the age of 4, some things started happening to me. Some sexual abuse started happening to me. And it continued on for years after that. And so I had my first drink when I was probably 4 or 5 years old. I remember climbing up on the cabinet. It was some E&J brandy. And I did this. And I was searching for that ever since. I never drank for the taste. I always drank for the effect. I need to say food was a part of my addiction. That was something I could do where nobody really questioned that. They questioned it, but they didn't understand. I was a really nervous eater. And so let me kind of move on a little bit. The last incident happened, around this time of year. And around this time of year, I do still get the emotions and the mental trauma. But I have AA and I have Design for Living. I don't have to escape with alcohol today, but I can still face what I'm experiencing right now. And so it's amazing that you got that she asked me to share in this month alone. It was around this time when everything came out in the open. I had became pregnant by my mother's boyfriend, and it was a very abusive house. We didn't know how to act. I have siblings, because I won't say their name. I have a sibling, a younger sibling, and we didn't know how to react. We had to react in the manner that how he was acting for that day, and that could be up and down. It just was so unmanageable. Somebody said the other day they had a colorful childhood. Mine was in 3D, HD, all of that. So. You know, I have to use my own little thing to it. But, and I just got tired of this. And so I got the courage to go to my eighth grade teacher. I was about to graduate the eighth grade. And he had just finished doing what he usually do to me. And I washed myself off, And I used to wash myself consistently because I felt so dirty and just icky. And so I went to my eighth grade teacher and I said, I need to talk to you. And it was still, school was still in. And I think I had just graduated the eighth grade or something like that. I don't remember. And I went and she came and she said the look on my face, she got somebody to sit in for her class and she came and she talked to me and I told her everything. And 2 weeks later, I was flown to Las Vegas to go to a school for girls where they had some challenges like me. And it was another Catholic school. And I stayed there for a little over a year. And then I wanted to come back home. I just missed being with my family. And I was seeing a psychologist. And he said that I had a blackout and I was very traumatized mentally. I was fucked up. But somehow, I was good at manipulating too, let me say, because that was a way that I had this thing over the predator. I could manipulate a lot of things as far as him not hurting my mom. I had to break up fights. It just was really crazy. My mom would hide her beer in my room, and there never was a sober day in our house. And sober today means for me sound thinking. So that wasn't even, it wasn't even about the alcohol and the drugs. It was about, we didn't have a sound or a stable, environment. So I came back home and I agreed to these people. I had to sit in a boardroom of all these people, the teachers and all these people, and tell them that I agreed to go to counseling every day and da 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 da. And so when I get home, not off the plane good, I decided I was going to become my own doctor. And my drinking career just went off skyrocketing. And I'm allergic to alcohol. I break out in drugs, cussing people out, having sex. You know, just doing it all. And I need to be honest with you guys. I love that lifestyle. It wasn't just about the drinking and drugs for me. I love the, you know, the camaraderie of me being able to use alcohol as my defense mechanism. Because if I drink gin, you know, they say it make you sin. So, I mean, if I drink tequila, I was thought I was a dancer. I just, so I love 30 and 31 when I heard that because I experimented in my own way. And so, and I could drink some of the big boys under the table. Mind you, I'm only probably 15 by now, going on 16. So I meet this guy. I'm from West Oakland, which they call the Lower Bottoms. And in my community, he was considered ghetto fabulous. I was attracted to that. I mean, he had the nice cars and the bling bling. You know, y'all should know some of that. And so I was attracted to that. And I was with that guy for some years, over 18 years. We have three wonderful children. They're all grown, 28, 27, and 21. I didn't know that he was into other activities, and that allowed me to dibble in some other activities. Just use your mind. And so my insanity, I thought I struck gold. Like I could drink as much as I want. I can use other stuff as much as I want, and I did. And not saying that I never even realized what the real issue was. It says alcohol was just a symptom. Now let's take a look at the causes and the conditions. I had a hell of them. And I do believe alcohol saved me because I couldn't contain the information or that trauma. And when I say this guy was having sex with me, it wasn't consensual. It wasn't something I wanted to do. It was something that was just done to me on a consistent basis. And he wasn't the only one. So again, let me back up a little bit. Before I even went to my teacher, I told my parents, and I come from that Catholic background that we kind of looked it good on the outside and, you know, and we'll go on in the house, stay in the house. And so we had hella pink elephants in our family, hella of them, just act like they're not there. And I went and I told an adult, and not one adult protected me. And for years, I drank behind that because not one person protected me from all this abuse. And so, let's go back a little. So I have these children, and now I'm in the house all the time. And I'm drinking a lot. I'm drinking, from morning to night. I never took a day off in my drinking career. I never took a sick leave. None of that. I was dedicated to my job. I didn't need vacation pay. I didn't need none of that. I was dedicated to my drinking career. And, so what happened was I had sex with a guy that, how can I say this? He was known in the community too, and he had some stuff that I wanted, you know? Okay, but stop, to help me with my alcohol, right? Okay, so anyway, I ended up getting pregnant by this guy. Shit. So now the shit hit the fan now. I hadn't stopped drinking. I hadn't stopped. I just told you I hadn't stopped doing anything. So I have this baby that has drugs and alcohol in his system. The baby was taken from me, and also my other kids. My other kids was fortunate to go with their dad. And so my insanity was, it's party time. I mean, I felt like a chicken in a coop because like I told you, I would do the necessity things with my kid. Like I would feed them, I would clothe them, I would play with them, but I was always in one room for more than an hour. And when I got in the program, they said that was child abandonment, even though I was in the same house with my kids, but I was always in another room. So when my children left, it really took off. I was having people come all up in my house. It was the party at Dorothy's house. And, I ended up losing my house. I spent a week in jail. Mind you, none of this is saying maybe you should think about your drinking or something. Maybe, you know, 'cause you losing everything. I stayed in a motel for 2 years. All this stuff was like okay to me. I got complacent in that lifestyle. And, man, was my thinking warped. So let's get into some recovery stuff. I had this backpack. I was walking around in this backpack. Let me back up a little bit. After I lost my house, I ended up going back with my children's father, which was another abusive relationship. I was the kind of alcoholic. I guess I was an isolator a little bit because he wouldn't like, I couldn't talk to other people, especially men. So, at any time I could get a free time, I would invite people, to come drink with me or look for people to come do stuff. I was giving myself away, and that's not normal. Normal alcoholics and addicts, I don't know about y'all, but they don't just give their stuff away. So I was looking for just some kind of companionship with somebody. And, then I started doing all kind of stuff. You know where they talk about crossing that invisible line? I have been crossed that invisible line. I was having sex with a thank God I don't have any disease, but I was having frivolous sex with all kind of people, still wanting that fulfillment, looking for love in what they say in all the wrong places. And, something hit me. It was June 16th, 2002. I was with at this girl house. Prior to that night, I got in a car with a guy. I didn't know him. He was wondering why was I walking out that late at night. And something hit me when I got in the car with that guy. Like, Dorothy, you really crossing lines now. You're getting in cars with strangers. And, of course, he had all the party accessories, and that inspired me to get in the car. Fortunately, we ended up being right across the street from my mother's house. And then I went in this house, and they were doing all kind of sorts of things that people do when they're drinking and doing drugs. And I'm like, now, Dorothy, what the fuck is going on? And so I guess I got my first spiritual awakening. And why I always start my story off that I'm a Catholic is because I did have a introduction of a higher power. Alcoholics Anonymous just allowed me to have a more intimate relationship with a higher power today. And I prayed and I read the Psalms 18. And whatever voice that was, it told me what to do. It told me to go to my mom's house. I said she wouldn't be home. She was there. I said I need to take a shower and I need to use the phone. I ended up using the phone and I called the program and I went into Sisters and I stayed there 18 months. After Sisters, I went into, I went to Options Aftercare. I was the type of alcoholic, I just didn't want to stop drinking. I needed to learn how to live. Because I was actually a vampire at the end of my drinking career. When it get dark, that's when I wake up. When the sun come up, that's when I go to bed. And, I got really light. I wasn't coming outside. I mean, I was really getting light. And, you know, my children's father said, you are a vampire. I really was. And so I had to learn when to get up. You know, I learned all them things being in the program. And I also learned about anger management. I remember I was cussing my facilitator out. I'm not fucking angry. And he's like, you are angry. And I'm like, I'm not angry. We're going back and forth. And he said, you have rage, Dorothy, rage. And I was going to kill myself. Almost forgot to say my story. I prayed this prayer, that I was, cause I came up with this bright idea that, on 7th Street, there's a four-way intersection and I was going to go stand in front of that and I was going to kill myself. And something said, what if you live? And I mean, I was upset. I was really upset. I had plotted that out for a long time. And today I'm grateful that I didn't succeed with that, but I hated getting up. I hated waking up in the morning. God, why did you wake me up? I swore off I'm not going to drink this time. And the first was a trigger for me, I should say. Because every 31st or the 30th, you know, sometimes the check come. I don't know if y'all know about, they used to give checks on the 1st and the 15th. And I would promise I wasn't going to do this again, and then I would do the same thing. And something hit me that I was really powerless over alcohol, because when I really wanted to stop, I couldn't stop. And so I seen these ladies. I had just did a store run and did all this stuff, and I tell you guys, that house did look like it had this ding. It was a white house. And there were all these Caucasian women, and I'm going, something up about this house. You know. So I asked these ladies what this house was. It was a program. And so, of course, I was intrigued and everything. And like I said, it was right before the first. So I took the number and I gave it some more thought. Like I really needed to think about it. Right? And so, eventually I called them, and, I remember going in there and they were like, they don't have any beds. And I said, I need to speak to the person in charge. I'm going to die. If I don't get in here, I'm going to die. And, when I tell you guys that I consume so much alcohol and drugs, I shouldn't be standing here today. I mean, I have congested so much that my tongue was raw. My hand, I probably was about to have a stroke. And of course I wait till it wear off, and I would do this over and over and over again. And so going into that Sisters program was the best thing for me. I learned a lot about emotional things, about mental things, and how to deal with life and take responsibility for myself. And it's been a hard journey, but it's been worth it. I know I didn't skip around. Forgive me for that. After Sisters, I went into Options, and then I went into a transitional home, and I stayed there. And so my first 4 years of sobriety, when I was 4 years sober, then that's when I got my first studio. I love that studio. I didn't have anything. I didn't have a fork. I didn't have a sheet. And, of course, it was somebody from AA that came and gave me everything that I needed. And that was God using this person. And I will say her name because she's not here no more. Her name was Joan, and she's not here anymore. But Joan was one of the old timers at Good Morning America, and she took me under her wing. And she was helping me. We had these stairs, and she was helping me. And she was an older woman. And we got into this argument. because she wanted to make my bed. And I said, no, you did enough. And she's like, no, Dorothea. That was the other mother I never had. And it scared me. I didn't have that motherly love. I didn't have that. Like when she was, it was just beyond my comprehension. And even when she died, they had a family meeting and there was four people's names she mentioned and I was one of them. And she wanted me to, she called him her boyfriend, which was her husband. She wanted me to stay and clean and take care of her husband. And I did that for some years. And, I have a lot of relationships today that are valuable to me. And I'm a kind of person, I like to have a small group of people. I don't need to have a big, a lot of people around me. I'm not a cliquey person. This is not a sorority. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. And, this place has saved my life and the ninth steps really have come true for me. I do have a new freedom and I do have a new outlook and I do have a new happiness. Because I was in bondage because of all that pain and now I can probably say that I forgive them people. I had to forgive them people. I have to even forgive my mother. You know, I have to because it says we don't get the luxury of that, of being self-centered. I don't know if it's self-centered will kill us. And a resentment is the number one offender of an alcoholic. So I have to be mindful of that on a daily basis. And I have to continue doing the work that is set before me. That's why I read that this is AA is not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. I have to keep doing this stuff. And the amazing thing is that my, I have to talk about them and I just probably won't use their name, even though they break my anonymity because I'm on Facebook and Snapchat or whatever, but I'm always on Snapchat. But I will say Christina and Alicia, I love my daughters. I'm so proud of them. And, I get to be a mother to them that I didn't have. And those girls are so smart. They talk like us. They're not one of us, but they say, you know, self mom, I don't want to harbor resentment or, you know, these repressed emotions that I'm going through in this situation. Or if I'm having a tough time, what's been the awesome thing lately is that they've been giving me advice and suggestions. And, I see my big brother back there. I don't have, that relationship that I would like to have with my immediate family, but AA has allowed me to have a family. And I believe family is who I hang with all year long, not just somebody I see once a year. And so this last Thanksgiving, me and my daughter, we cooked our butts off. I mean, we had greens, sweet potato pie, peach cobbler, ham, turkey, roast. I made a lot of stuff and, oh well. I could just tell y'all my life has really changed and I don't dread waking up in the morning anymore. I love waking up today and I can face my problems head on. And I know I can't face them by myself. That was the biggest thing for me. They told me I had to do step one perfectly and, you know, just making that admission because I've seen the evidence for years when I was out there in my drinking career and I would cuss people out, people that, I had to learn what being in a relationship was just with normal people. If you said no to me, you wasn't in my life anymore. You know, I told you guys my mind was totally warped and, they said, how I'm going to give something away that I don't have. And you guys taught me how to be a woman, how to be a mother, how to be a friend, how to be a good listener. That's key for me. Because listening, I didn't know how to do that. I would hear you. Yeah, I hear that. But I wasn't listening. Listening means I'm going to try to apply that and put that into practice. And I got to put Steve on blast. I do. That's my BFF and who would have thought? I mean, I don't think both of us planned that, but and he is a piece of work. Y'all, everybody knows me. So for me and him, Sonya say, when you and him in that office, it's like, I don't know what it is, but I really appreciate Steve and his family and his wife for coming, and Michelle and Michael. If it wasn't for Steve and Celeste, I wouldn't have got to love you guys either. And I really love you guys. You make me feel like I'm a part of your family. And my old girl Arena, my sponsor, I really love her. She's been a great influence on me. And so even though I don't have that relationship with my mom, I'm an adult now, but I do have women in my life that implement that in all ways. So actually I'm really lucky to have that and have a support system around me. And I never want to drink again. I never want to go back into that pit. And for me, I have to do the big chunks of the spiritual part of this program, because if I don't, then I'm doomed. And I need to say, because it's on my mind, my son is out there, and he was diagnosed. And there's nothing I can do to fix it. But it's been hard. It's been hard watching him in his little episodes. And the blessing part, because AA has allowed me to look at a different perspective on things. We've been hanging out more together. And it's kind of hard to have a child that's grown and you can't fix it. But I have to learn to have boundaries, and I have to learn when I can step in and when to step back, because I can't even afford to let my kids or anything distract me from my primary purpose, and to me, staying sober. Like they say, if I'm on an airplane, you know, I got to put the oxygen on me first. And but this has been really hard, just watching him, and there's nothing that I can't fix it. But I can be of service to him. I can try to be a good example for him. This time of year is just really hard for me. I was saying, I was in my head before I got here about the emotional part of the abuse. The dreams still come. They come in vivid HD for me. But like I said, you guys tell me if I have a situation, then how do I get to a solution? And so I've been trying to start writing. And I've blacked out a lot of it. So that's me being rigorously honest with you guys. I don't know if I really want to see that now. Like, let sleeping dogs lie. But I guess it'll come out when it's supposed to come out. And, I can really smile today, because say I'm not a victim anymore, and I don't have to let anything of my circumstances of my past or things outside of my control dominate me, because I would let things dominate me, and I don't have to do that anymore. And I'm kind of just stuck emotionally that I can't believe that I'm standing here and I'm speaking and I'm telling my truth to all of you, because 14 years ago, I didn't think anybody even cared about me, that even loved me at all. And you guys have showed me how to do those things. And I just got my license, and probably is a good thing, because I told y'all I never took a day off, so I probably would have ran and killed everybody. I don't know. I don't know. But I'm grateful that I finally got my license. I have a car now, and yeah, I know. I get to go to the store when I want to go to the store, do things that I want to do. I just got out of debt and try not to get back in debt. And I want to talk a little bit about my mother. I do, before my time runs out. My mother still hasn't faced the fact that this stuff has happened to me. So again, we're not talking, and I'm okay with that today, because I've did the footwork. I've did the steps and everything around this issue. And I just, don't want to keep going back into the past as far as digging in it, playing in the dirt. You know, I don't even want to play Say Dirt. Playing in some shit. I don't want to play in shit anymore. I just really don't. And that's been kind of a hard dynamics. And then my little brother came, which just got married and had a baby. And some things came up for him. And so I told him we had two different mothers. And, you know, I finally came to some acceptance with that. I can't diagnose nobody and say what they are. But she has a lot of symptoms of what we experience as being alcoholics and or addicts. And so I'm proud to say that I can stand on my own two feet today without wanting to kill myself or injure anybody else. And, you know, they say we can't do these steps and stay the same. That is so true. Them steps has really changed my life because I didn't know what my character defects was. I didn't know. I mean, it helped me. AA has really allowed me to put on some new glasses today. I can see things so different, and sometimes it baffles me. You know what a knife says, you know, things that used to baffle us? Well, that's on good things, too. Things good in my life baffle me, too, and I'm just so grateful to be a part of this community. I mean that from the core of my spirit, and thank you for asking me to share.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.